what's your emergency?
My daughter's been murdered. She's been murdered!
We absolutely were obsessed with this case.
January 13th, 1995 was the last known contact with Catherine.
She's handcuffed. She's been tortured.
It was always a big case within the department because it was the biggest case unsolved. Nobody felt safe anywhere. Nobody knew if it was a neighbor. Nobody knew if it was a police officer because of the handcuffs being used. My name is Tina Llewellyn.
Aaron Llewellyn. I'm a detective.
I'm a detective at Beaumont Police Department.
My sister's dead. My parents are over there.
Who's your sister?
Catherine Edwards.
I had no idea who Catherine Edwards was, but after I read decades of her journals, 1986, 1989, 91, 94, I feel like I know her. Things are looking up in my life. I'm going to teach second grade next year. I know I meant to do this. There were so many of her students that came forward to share the impact she had on their lives 25 years later.
They were always close to me in my heart. I'm Diana Coe, and I was friends with Catherine and her twin sister, Allison, since middle school. They were so sweet and so funny. They had a cute laugh, and everybody just loved them.
This was not an easy case to crack. Every free moment, I would try to work this case while still maintaining my caseload.
Staying up till midnight?
Every night. It just was not going to happen without the DNA.
If there was no DNA in this case, if that evidence had not been properly maintained, nope, we'd have never got there. My name is Brandon Best, Sergeant, Texas Rangers, Company A Cold Case Team. The technology has changed so much since 1995. By the time we got to Catherine Edwards, there were a lot more of these resources that were available.
We felt that genetic genealogy was going to be the answer to this case.
So you would do the police work.
Yes.
You would do the genealogy work.
Yes, along with another genealogist.
My name is Shara Broussard-Lapointe. Tina had started a tree, and we really think alike and work together to build this tree with 7,409 people in it.
Oh my gosh. I would call her no less than 5 times a day.
We were on the phone constantly.
Tell her what I found.
Just back and forth.
I blew her phone up.
Trying to get to the bottom.
We had to narrow down the different family members to find the direct lineage of our suspect.
Is this someone that knew her? Is this someone that was a stranger? She had some, you know, ex-boyfriends. There was always the worry that it was a police officer. Some criminal is not gonna have a pair of Smith & Wesson handcuffs.
There was no sign of forced entry at the time, right?
Right. Did we believe it was someone she knew? Yeah.
Natalie Morales reports, tracking the killer of Mary Catherine Edwards.
The thing that really got me about the case was you don't expect to have this beautiful young single school teacher be murdered in her own home. She was such a great person, came from such a great family.
For Texas Ranger Brandon Bess, almost everything about the Mary Catherine Edwards case was different.
It was an unusual crime scene. She's over the bathtub, and she's obviously been sexually assaulted and handcuffed behind her back.
Were they police-grade
handcuffs? Handcuffs have always been a key piece of this.
January 14th, 1995. It was a Saturday. Catherine, as most people called her, didn't show up for a family lunch, and she wasn't answering her phone. When her mother and father went to check on her, they had to see what no parent ever should.
What happened, ma'am?
We came over here and found her. Please send
someone. Okay, we're sending someone, ma'am. Was she shot or what?
We can't tell.
Catherine was 31.
My mom is the one that told me.
Diana Coe remembers hearing the news.
And so she said, have you not heard about Catherine? And I go, my Catherine?
She had been friends with Catherine and her twin sister Allison since middle school.
I was new to the area, so I knew no one. And they just started talking to me, asked me my name, and we were friends from that point forward.
The sisters, both school teachers, looked so much alike, everyone had trouble telling them apart, especially their young students.
Miss Edwards was my second grade teacher.
Helenia Adams remembers being in her classroom.
Most of us grew up in a pretty tough environment, and being around Miss Edwards was a joy.
Originally, they believed that she might have been drowned, but there wasn't enough fluid in her lungs. So then it kind of became a suffocation by compression.
I just remember being told that our teacher wouldn't make it to class that day. Everyone just crying.
Early investigators could not piece together what happened, but those police-grade handcuffs were a big clue.
It was almost talked about like a ghost story around a campfire.
Detective Aaron Llewellyn.
Maybe it was somebody in law enforcement or somebody in security. Could it have been somebody that we knew?
In the weeks after the murder, police focused on tracing the serial numbers of the handcuffs, but came up empty. They also zeroed in on an old boyfriend, David Perry.
They focused on him early on because there was no forced entry.
But Perry was out of town that night. He gave a DNA sample, and it was not a match.
I wasn't there. It's not me.
The crime scene DNA stayed well preserved, and the years dragged on and on, until forensic science changed.
Genetic genealogy technology.
Genetic genealogy.
By 2018, there was a way to take the DNA left at a crime scene and search for biological relatives. A program, GEDmatch, scarfs up all the DNA from people who agree to share it with law enforcement and upload it when they use sites like Ancestry.com and 23andMe.
Ranger Bess approached me and he asked if I thought we had a case that would fit the bill for that type of investigation. I said, absolutely, I know the perfect case for this. And it was the Catherine Edwards case.
So in April 2020, the DNA from Catherine Edwards' crime scene went to Othram, a lab outside of Houston, for testing.
There, they would give us familial matches, and from there, we would start trying to build a family tree to get us closer to our suspect.
But the number of names to pursue was overwhelming.
When the family tree began to grow beyond my computer screen, I started to get a little bit confused, and that's when Tina jumped on board.
Aaron's wife, Tina, an auto crimes detective, began using her off hours to help sort through it.
The matches were all Cajun.
Cajun ancestry,
yes.
Coming from the Louisiana area?
Yes, particularly Kaplan, Louisiana.
So Tina went back to Catherine's journals looking for clues.
To see if I could see a Cajun name that jumped out to me. I did find a few French names and they were quickly eliminated and nowhere in our tree.
And as she was building out the branches, one of the names on the family tree kept coming up. LaPointe.
As I'm researching the matches and building my trees, and you're researching other people's trees, I kept noticing Shira LaPointe had built that tree. And then I'm working some more, I do some more research. Well, Shira LaPointe built this tree. And I'm like, is she related to our suspect? I had no idea who she was.
This is actually my great-grandmother, Claudia.
And when they called her, they found out Shara had been building her family tree.
It was my family's DNA kits that I had uploaded to GEDmatch.
And then they found out something that changed the course of the investigation. Shara was known professionally as the gene hunter and already skilled at working these cases. She'd identified one of the women buried along Interstate Highway 45 in the Texas Killing Fields case. And she agreed to lend her expertise.
I told him that I was willing to help.
Even if it meant taking a hard look at her own relatives.
It was kind of scary because I'm putting my own second cousins in this tree. And I'm thinking, oh my gosh, you know, could one of my grandfather's sister's grandchildren have done this? They lived here in Texas.
It was a complicated, multi-layered process using publicly available DNA, birth and death records, finding parents, siblings, and cousins.
As you build those trees, you look for information that is pertinent to the case that you're working on. We had a tag for people who were in Beaumont. She was a teacher. As you build tree, you look at people who are in education.
Every one of these lines are built out.
The tree grew up and down and sideways. There were almost 7,500 names.
That's a lot of hours, a lot of work, and a lot of people in a family tree.
All the while, Tina hardly slept, working through most nights, knowing there was a killer still out there.
Every day counted. Every day mattered. I needed to get it solved.
You wake in the middle of the night alone in your apartment, and that feeling starts to set in that something is wrong. Realizing your home is no longer safe, you plan your escape, but he has other plans. The details are the kind that stay with you. Water running in an empty apartment, a locked door that shouldn't be locked, that uneasy feeling of being watched. That's the setup for Unhinged, the new immersive game experience on Netflix. Your phone becomes your controller, flashlight, and lifeline to your best friend. As the attacker in your building closes in, the phone in your hand will ring. The question is, will you answer? Play now, only on Netflix.
Let's be honest, traditional banks have a habit of hitting you with overdraft and monthly fees, and those costs can really add up when you're just trying to manage your own money. But Chime is changing the way people bank. They offer the most rewarding, fee-free banking built for you, not the 1%. Chime has thousands of fee-free ATMs because you shouldn't pay to access your own money. And Chime members can benefit from up to $1,150 in annual rewards, completely fee-free. You'll get 5% cash back on your Chime card in a category of choice like gas or groceries, and savings that grow faster than a 3.75 APY. My younger self could have seriously benefited from all that. Plus, Chime is rated 5 stars by USA Today for customer service. I'm talking real humans, 24/7. Chime is not just smarter banking, it is the most rewarding way to bank. Join the millions who are already banking fee-free today. Head to chime.com/48hours. That is chime.com/48hours. It only takes a few minutes to sign up.
Chime is a fintech, not a bank. Banking services for MyPay and Chime card provided by Chime's bank partners. Optional products and services may have fees or charges. Stated annual percentage yield and cash back for Chime Prime only. No minimum balance required. Checking account ranking based on a J.D. Power survey published October 20, 2025. For more information on APY rates, MyPay, SpotMe, and travel perks, go to chime.com/disclosures.
Hunkered down at their computers day after day, constantly back and forth on the phone, Tina Llewellyn and genealogist Cheryl LaPointe are quickly becoming great partners.
She was a team player from jump. Never had met me. We talked so often that we became friends.
Best buds.
Best buds. I don't know what else to say.
And when they needed DNA, they turned to Tina's husband, Aaron, and Texas Ranger Brandon Bess.
So from that point, me, Brandon Bess would drive around Texas and go talk to these people.
Convincing someone to give their DNA up, to give a piece of themselves up to you in a homicide investigation can be very difficult. When we would sense anxiety in someone, Aaron would immediately tell them, hey, who do you want to play you in the movie? And they would look at Aaron like he was crazy and say, what are you talking about? Well, this guy's a Texas Ranger. Everything they do turns into a movie. Who do you want to play your role in this movie? That calmed them down every time. And I, of course, threw out there, hey, I've already got Brad Pitt. So, you know, you can't be Brad because Brad's playing me.
Was there ever a time, though, that somebody actually thought, my uncle may actually be a killer? Who knows?
In every one of these cases that I've worked using DNA and genetic genealogy, you have at least one person, usually two or three, that says, you know what? I had that weird Uncle Joe.
Once the uploads were compared to the killer's DNA, if the amount of shared genetic material was low, they knew it was a dead end.
there were times when we would come across a name and I'm like, you get that, the butterflies in your stomach, like, hey, maybe this is our guy. And then it turns out it's not our guy.
After almost 3 months of ups and downs and nearly nonstop work, Shara hit pay dirt.
It was about 10:30 at night.
She was working a family line very distantly related to her own.
It was a very common Cajun name, Thibodeau. I got to a couple who were in Beaumont. I was able to see from records that they had two sons.
This was a major lead, a family in Catherine's town with two sons who went to Forest Park High, the same school Catherine did, at around the same time.
I put the names in the tree, and I messaged Tina, and I said, there's a couple in Beaumont. I'm tired. I'm going to bed. And I turned my cell phone off, and I fell asleep on the sofa. And when I woke up the next morning, my phone had just blown up.
And it was you on the other end.
Yes.
What were you saying?
This is them. We found them. Just didn't know which one.
Okay. It's either Michael Foreman or Clayton Foreman. What did you do to figure that out?
The first name I ran was Clayton. And then when I came across his prior conviction for the sexual assault, the hair on the back of my neck stood up. I'm like, this is our guy.
In 1981, a 19-year-old woman told police that Clayton Foreman bound her hands and raped her. She had also gone to Forest Park High School, where Clayton was the manager of the football team. Foreman was convicted, but was given probation and paid a fine.
But he did not have to give a DNA sample at that time.
This was back in the early 80s. We didn't have sex offender registry, no DNA database.
And then they found another connection. It went all the way back to Diana Coe, Catherine's friend from middle school. In high school, Diana fell madly in love. Her boyfriend had graduated 3 years ahead of her, and they got engaged.
He was so kind. He had the most wonderful personality.
And when she started planning her wedding, she immediately turned to her old friends, Catherine and Allison.
And they were one of the first ones I thought of as a bridesmaid. And I asked them, and they said yes.
And the groom, the man Diana Coe married back in 1982, now he was their number one suspect, Clayton Foreman.
She, in fact, did know him.
Yes.
In hindsight, there were signs. When Diana found out about Clayton's legal troubles, the wedding was less than 3 months away.
And the wedding invitations had already been mailed out.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, rape? I said, oh, there's no way.
But she never got any details, and her fiancé explained it away.
He kept telling me it was a big misunderstanding. And so in my mind, I thought, well, he must be telling the truth, because if he got arrested, he's not in jail.
But you didn't really believe it was rape.
Right.
Diana's sister Anne and her brother Scooter were not so sure, and neither were their parents, who wanted her to call it off.
And I said, well, Diana, why don't you just wait? And she didn't want to wait. She wanted to marry Clay. She was in love with him.
She's believing him, and she's wanting to get married, then we have to support as a family.
He was like, I'm so, so sorry. I love you. I want us to be married. I want us to have a family. And so I was like, okay, you know, so I went through with it.
Diana and Clayton stayed married for a little more than 11 years. They had a son. The relationship began to fray over Foreman lying about their finances, and it ended after he had an affair. And looking back, Diana can see that he had an unhealthy fascination with police officers and the tools of their trade, like handcuffs.
I remember that he had ordered those handcuffs. Well, he had them hung over the rearview mirror, and I didn't think anything of it.
When Catherine was killed, they were divorced. But Diana remembers calling her ex-husband to talk about it.
I think I was, you know, crying, and I said, oh, my God. I said, somebody has murdered Catherine. And he goes, oh, really? just like no emotion. When we hung the phone up, I can remember because I was like kind of squinting and kind of like going, God, that's kind of odd.
With all the mounting evidence, Foreman needed to be found. He was 60 and no longer living in Beaumont. They quickly tracked him to Reynoldsburg, Ohio.
What was he doing there?
He was an Uber driver at the time. So I was able to send a lead to a field office up there and basically did what we call a trash run.
You need to collect a piece of DNA so that you can ensure that it's the right guy, right?
Correct. So that's what they did. They surveilled his house and then went and snatched a bag of trash and sent it to me. So I brought that stuff to Houston to the DPS crime lab. And from there, they tested it.
The likelihood that the DNA belonged to Clayton Foreman was a big number. 461 septillion. It doesn't get better than that, says Cheryl LaPointe.
I mean, you can't fight those odds. You cannot fight those off.
And that was all they needed.
I got a text from a DPS lab technician, and she said, go get his ass.
Aaron Llewellyn and Brandon Bess were about to hop a plane to Ohio, ready to face the man they felt sure had killed Catherine.
Mr. Foreman, right?
Yes, sir.
And while they're doing that, Tina pays a visit to Diana Coe.
Did they tell you they had DNA, though? Tina told you that?
Oh, yeah, yeah. And I just went, oh, my God, please don't tell me it was Clay. I almost fell to the ground. I was just like, oh, my God. I can't believe he's done this.
What do you think of sharing your DNA with law enforcement to help solve a murder? Chat now with the 48 Hours team on Facebook and X.
When Texas Ranger Brandon Bess and Detective Aaron Llewellyn arrive at the Franklin County Sheriff's Office to confront Clayton Foreman, they have a cover story. It's about a lost item from one of Foreman's Uber rides.
We go in under the ruse of someone had left a purse in his car. So he came in voluntarily to talk about a purse that was in the car.
It was April 29th, 2021, 26 years after Catherine Edwards was murdered. And they are sure they are sitting in front of the man who murdered her.
And we're asking you to visit with us about a crime that we're investigating, okay?
Did he immediately go, uh-oh?
No, he didn't.
So the crime that we're looking at is the murder of Mary Catherine Edwards. And she was murdered in 1995.
I guess he pretty quickly realized he wasn't there to give up a purse.
He did.
And we found a picture of a wedding picture that she and her sister, Allison, were actually in your wedding.
Right.
And
1982.
82. Okay. Do you ever remember anyone ever coming to you about that crime?
No.
Were you aware of the crime even?
No.
You didn't know the crime occurred?
No, sir.
Okay.
We backed him into a bunch of hard corners. He claimed that he didn't even know that she was dead.
You didn't know that Catherine Edwards was murdered?
No, sir.
Did not. Do you remember them from school? Do you remember the girls from school?
Not really, because they were freshmen.
When you were a senior?
Yes, sir.
Okay. So, on Mary Edwards, Mary Catherine Edwards, didn't know her well. Did you ever visit with her at all?
No.
Did you ever go in her house at all? Any house that she ever lived in?
No.
Okay.
You know, did you know where she lived? No, had no idea.
So, and he's denying.
He is denying. You know, in these DNA cases, whether you're going to get a confession or not, you want to build up that background of, hey, did you know them? Number one.
Did y'all have much acquaintance with them, or was it just like a high school friend thing?
How did you know them?
I think they were bridesmaids for my ex-wife.
That's right.
Did you ever go on a date?
Never dated.
All the way up to, did you ever have sex with this person?
Never, obviously, had sex with her.
No.
Never.
Did you go to college together? Did you do everything was a no?
And we had those denials several times. And then so towards the end of the interview, we asked him, well, if all those things are true, can you explain how your DNA ended up on her and on her bed.
Do you understand DNA?
Mm-hmm.
And do you understand how DNA works? You understand you're made of DNA.
Right.
He's made of DNA, I'm made of DNA.
And that, I think that Foreman knew enough about DNA that he thought he would have been caught already. He knew that he had never submitted his DNA. He had no clue that he was going to be arrested that day.
Clay, I'm on level with you. Right here and now, I want you to hear me real close.
All right, sir.
That crime scene was processed really well, and your DNA was on Catherine's bed and was inside Catherine.
Okay. I mean, I don't know how I got there, but per se, it was there.
There's only one way for it to get there.
Okay.
And that's by you putting it there.
Okay.
Do you understand that? Do you understand the implications of that? The day that she died, the night that she died, your DNA is in her and your DNA is on her bedspread. Now, I don't want you to say anything right this second. I want you to think about the next words that come out of your mouth. I want you to think very hard about that, okay? There's two people that know that story. You're one of them and she's the other. And she can't talk.
Mm-hmm.
What I ask you is, now, to be honest with us completely, and tell us,
yeah,
how did that happen?
I'm not going to say anything. If I need an attorney now, I think.
You probably need one, or you do need one.
If you're saying I did that, then I probably need an attorney to talk to.
Well, that's all we got then. We're going to let you walk out of the door just like we told you.
It's a grainy video, but you can probably see us grinning at each other.
You have all your stuff.
That he thinks he's walking out of here. He thinks he's fixing to leave here.
So as he got out down the hallway headed towards the elevator, we stopped him and arrested him for the murder of Catherine Edwards.
And after all those years and all that work, Aaron Llewellyn and Brandon Bess had one thing left they needed to do.
If you remember back when we were talking about the crime scene, she was handcuffed. So we had talked to the DA's office beforehand and got permission to use those handcuffs.
The very handcuffs that bound Catherine the night she died.
How did it feel to put those handcuffs on?
Very good. It's a moment I'll never forget. You feel like you got to do something for Catherine. You know, like physically got to do for her is take those cuffs that bound her when she was murdered and put them back on the guy that murdered her. It's, you know, it may seem small to some, but it was a really big deal to us and it felt good.
Even though they'd had their suspicions about him, the news that Clayton Foreman was arrested for the murder of Catherine Edwards was still a shock for his ex-wife, Diana Coe, and her siblings, Ann and Scooter.
And she calls me and she says, Clay murdered Catherine. And I said, do what?
Your brain doesn't, because it knows him as a person, as somebody that you know, your brother-in-law or your brother.
That was hard.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I thought of Allison.
Mm-hmm.
And I just couldn't believe it. My thought immediately went to Allison, and I just said, Allison, oh my God, she's gonna hate me.
There are people you are told to trust. Lawyers, teachers, especially doctors. But what happens when you put your life in someone's hands and they betray you? The hit podcast Dr. Death is back, and this season is unlike any other. Dr. Death the Cowboy is the story of a charming neurosurgeon who rode into Western towns selling a persona of confidence and care. He wore cowboy boots in the operating room and became sought after by patients he promised to heal. Instead, he left a trail of broken bodies. This season is about a doctor who was never truly held accountable for the patients whose lives he ruined. A story of greed, betrayal, and a fight for justice that will leave you questioning who to trust. Listen to Dr. Death the Cowboy wherever you get your podcasts, or binge the entire series right now only with Audible.
Opening arguments began this morning.
Foreman is charged with capital murder.
Guilty or not guilty?
Not guilty.
March 12th, 2024.
This is not going to be easy for a lot of people because it's been a long time coming.
Nearly 30 years after Catherine Edwards was found dead in her townhouse.
You got to remember, this happened in 1995.
Beaumont prosecutor Patrick Canaud and his colleagues Mike Laird and Sonny Eckhart are ready for trial.
You're going to get to learn a lot about DNA.
And they're extremely confident about their case against Clayton Foreman.
Mr. Burbank, do you want to make an opening statement at this time?
No, Your Honor.
Tom Burbank is defending Foreman.
He didn't really have anything, and he knew it.
Next witness.
The prosecution calls Catherine's twin sister, Allison.
We wanted to remind everyone this is about Catherine and her family. And that's the way we wanted to start off with.
Here at 60, sitting before them, was the spitting image of what could have been.
That is a picture of my sister Catherine.
Reliving the day she lost Catherine.
And then the next thing we know, you know, my mom and dad drove up. And told us what, I mean, they... There were no words. She was dead. That was all that mattered. I didn't know how, what, or anything. I didn't know what happened to her. It was just that she was gone was all I knew.
The pain and the loss still so palpable.
4 years later, I had a daughter, and her name is Catherine. Catherine Ann. After my sister. And she never got to know her. That's the hardest part.
It was a lie.
Helenia Adams, Catherine Edwards' student when she was 7 and now 37, sat in the courtroom nearly every day.
It was times when they would show photos or when they showed the videos of her on the floor. It was as if your heart was breaking all over again.
You measure the proximity of matching DNA.
Detective Tina Llewellyn and genealogist Cheryl Lapointe, along with other crime lab technicians, walk the jury through the process of the genealogy and the DNA match. Texas Ranger Bess and Detective Aaron Llewellyn go through the final stages of the investigation, all carefully coordinated to make the chain of evidence airtight. And on the last day, the prosecution calls all the women who had been scarred by Foreman and were alive to say so.
He was your supervisor.
That's correct.
An old coworker.
Whenever I opened up the drawer, there was a pair of handcuffs.
A former fiancé who found pictures of young girls.
He said to me that he had them so that he could fantasize about taking their virginity.
His ex-wife, Diana Coe, who agreed to testify.
Did you think at the time you were in love with the defendant?
Yes.
When you saw him at trial, how hard was that for you?
That was very hard. And it was very embarrassing to me. And I do feel ashamed.
And it was during the trial that Diana learned about what really happened to that 19-year-old woman in the months before she and Foreman married.
It was the most horrific thing that I could have ever heard. I couldn't imagine what she went through and was so brave to get up and say what she said.
She was the final witness, returning to the night her car got stuck and Foreman, falsely claiming he was a policeman, offered to help.
First he tied my hands back.
He tied your hands behind your back?
Yes.
Did he threaten to cut your throat if you didn't?
Yes.
This whole thing took a while, didn't it?
Yes, sir. I'm sorry.
What happened then?
He took me home.
Did he say something that you felt was odd?
Yes, he said three things. He said, stop crying. I'm sorry. I hope I didn't hurt you.
And there was another woman who did not testify but went on the record. An alleged victim of Foreman's violence, also a high school friend of Diana, who did not press charges. She told investigators Foreman attacked her from behind and put a gun to her head.
She had indicated back in 85 or 86 that he had come to her apartment and knocked on the door and told her that he was having financial and marital problems with Diana and he needed somebody to talk to, and so she let him in.
Prosecutors suspect Foreman used a similar ruse the night he appeared at Catherine Edwards' door.
That's the way we thought he got to Catherine. Because Catherine was very, very Christian, very given, very naive, and it's a wonderful thing to be, except when you're faced with Clayton Foreman.
I've always wondered, did he say something about me? Hey, it's Clay. I need to talk to you about something about Diana. I've always wondered, but I thought I'll never know.
After 7 days of prosecution testimony, the defense calls no witnesses, and attorney Burbank closes.
You heard different things in reference to sex things and stuff like that. Okay. Still doesn't make him a murderer. You may not like him because of what people said, but I submit to you they have not proven murder beyond a reasonable doubt.
The prosecution wraps up its case.
And it's so easy to believe that evil doesn't exist. It is here in this courtroom here today. These are things I wish I didn't know exist, and I'm sorry I had to talk to you about it. But I didn't bring this here. He did.
Now it would be up to a jury to decide Clayton Foreman's future. Patrick Canald wants them to remember Catherine Edwards didn't have one.
And I do pray that Mike and I have something else. Doing a good job for Catherine and you. I hope we've done our job.
What's the business idea you've been putting off because it feels too complicated? Shopify is the ultimate excuse killer, designed to help you start your business with every necessary tool ready on day one. Taking the leap is a big deal, but Shopify makes it incredibly simple. You can easily bring your brand's unique style to life using their beautiful templates and AI tools to launch a gorgeous site with zero coding experience. You also get the ultimate peace of mind knowing that Shopify checkout is already optimized for maximum sales, making it seamless for returning customers to buy in a single click. If you ever feel overwhelmed or hit a snag, Shopify's built-in AI assistant, Sidekick, answers your toughest questions and keeps you moving forward. You'll be growing your business with the same tools used by the world's biggest brands. All you need is the idea. Shopify handles the rest. Go to shopify.com/pave to start your free trial today. That's shopify.com/pave. Shopify.com/pave.
Is this verdict a unanimous one?
Yes, sir.
It takes less than an hour for the jury to come back with a verdict.
We, the jury, find the defendant guilty.
Clayton Foreman, guilty and sentenced to life for the murder of Catherine Edwards.
It didn't take long because all the evidence was there. Once it got into the DNA, more or less sealed it for him.
Larry Delcom, juror number two, says he and his fellow jurors had very little to talk about.
He had no defense that it wasn't him. There's no denial there.
It felt like, hey, this thing does work.
For Helenaya Adams, finally some justice for a favorite teacher after all.
I wanted to close that door, finally. She meant so much to me.
And when you heard those words, guilty, what was that like for you?
We did it.
Was it an emotional, we did it?
This whole case was emotional.
For detectives Tina and Aaron Llewellyn, genealogist Cheryl Lapointe, and Ranger Brandon Bess, it was the ending they had all worked for, but it left lots of room for reflection.
And I think the justice system has worked and he's where he needs to be. But to say that that's honestly justice for Mary Catherine, it's frustrating to know that he lived a life and she should have been able to live a life and have children and go on. That is frustrating. I never used the word closure. I never used the word justice. There's no justice. He got to live 26 years. He got to get married. He got to have kids. She did not. There's no justice.
I don't believe there is such a thing as closure, not on this earth.
Bess always wanted a confession. They all wanted to know why.
70% of the time, you're not going to get that. And 100% of the time, you're not going to get the whole story anyway.
We all wanted those answers, and because he was spineless and didn't talk to us or give us any information, we'll never know the details behind it.
And everyone was still reeling, asking themselves how it was that Clayton Forman walked among them and no one saw his monstrous core all those years, hiding in plain sight.
So when we identified him, I actually have mutual friends with him that were in shock. They could not believe it was him because they knew he was such a nice guy. He had fooled so many people for so long.
I personally believe that there are more victims out there. We just haven't found them yet.
I find it hard to believe that he has not assaulted other people. I really feel
I
with all
that.
My with all of my being, I feel that there are others.
And how do you think he was able to conceal this darker side?
That's the part I cannot.
I can't. I don't understand it. I don't know how he could. Like I always say, it's like Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde.
I have my own speculations. I think some people are demon possessed or demon influenced, because that's pure evil. There's nothing else you can explain. That's just evil.
I was married to a monster, is what I was married to, and didn't know it.
Didn't know it.
I think if he wouldn't have married me, she'd still be alive.
But in the wake of the trial, it was time to turn away from Forman and remember Catherine Edwards as she was, and in her own words.
Wow, I didn't realize the timing on this one. December the 11th, 1994. She was murdered a month later. I have given my life to God, and I will follow His path for me. That gives me a feeling of great relief and peace. The human spirit is stronger than anything that can happen to it.
The vibrant, beloved schoolteacher in her prime, gone far too soon.
If you could talk directly with Mary Catherine Edwards, what would you wish to tell her?
Oh my gosh. I think I would say I love her. And I'm sorry. I'm so sorry this happened to her. And I was honored to be given the privilege to help give answers. Very honored. Very honored. She was a very special person. She really was.
Unfortunately, it introduced me to real loss, to trauma, to fear, to grief, to heartbreak, to all the feelings. A podcast I watched, they would always ask aspiring lawyers, when did you fall in love with law? And I think that's when I fell in love with law, in the second grade, when Clayton Forman took my light from me.
Helenaya is a student once again. She's studying for her master's in criminal justice and plans to apply to law school, a tribute to her teacher.
Clayton Forman is eligible for parole in 2061. By then, he will be 101 years old.
What is Toyota affordability? It's buying smart. Right now, your local Toyota dealer has great deals available on some of the most reliable trucks on the market, like the off-road ready Tacoma, rugged full-size Tundra, and the legendary 4Runner, each with the space, tech, and features to handle it all, from the worksite to the trails. It means driving for less, with efficient hybrid options available, extending your overall driving range, and delivering great MPGs, meaning bigger savings at the pump without sacrificing power. And it means trading for more. The Tacoma and Tundra are ranked number one and number two in resale value over all vehicles, according to Kelley Blue Book, which can mean thousands more than average when it's time to trade in. That's Toyota affordability. Buy smart, drive for less, and trade for more. Shop Toyota.com or your local dealer for deals and details. Vehicles projected resale value is specific to the 2026 model year. For more information, visit KelleyBlueBooksKBB.com. Toyota brand average resale value is 53% versus the average vehicle at 45%. Toyota, let's go places.